So good morning. One of my fascinations is personality inventories. I've taken Myers-Briggs quite a few times. In the four personalities spectrum, I know very well I lean towards melancholic, and I'm currently very fascinated by the Enneagram for the last couple of years, and in case you're wondering, I am a six with a five wing. A friend, though, recently asked me if I'd heard of the Big Five, which is one of the inventories that is more research and has more of a research and scientific base to it. And we were having an e-conversation about this, and he directed me to an online questionnaire, and then we took screenshots of the results, and we shared that over the texting. And when he saw mine, he seemed relatively surprised because I had high scores in two different scales, one called conscientiousness and one called openness. And I was like, okay, so what does this mean that you're so surprised by this? And he said it's really unusual because they tend to be opposites in some ways. High conscientiousness and low openness tend to be scores that we would probably associate with people who we would consider conservative. Likewise, high openness, low conscientiousness would be scores that we'd associate with typical liberals, and not necessarily politically, but more as personalities. And it helped me to understand a little bit of what I find in myself, in that I am very much someone who pushes for change, like a liberal, but I also feel drawn to preserve the good of what's already there, like conservatives. So the phrase, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, is something I can really get behind. So of all the people in this room, that also makes me probably a bit more likely to look at theological terms that we don't readily use and currently, and see if they continue to have value for us. Thus, me talking today about sin. It is a term that I think is rarely used, and when it's used, it is often used kind of mockingly. The last couple of weeks, I've actually been listening to podcasts where two different people have tried to refer to sin. They were both people, like either one was British, one was Irish, so I got to hear the full accents of how they were dealing with this, and one said the dreaded word, sin. And it's a term that's been used really disparagingly. And so it's no wonder for us it's a term that's, you know, probably better left behind. But I'm not a lot of people, and I'm curious about the way sin is thought of and used. And more importantly, I'm wondering if this idea, if it's rightly understood, still has benefit for us. So when I look at how this term sin is used in the Bible, I see at least two different conceptions of it. First one, I am going to call conception A, because I couldn't think of a better term. So with concept A, a couple places you might see the concept. Proverbs has a verse that says, if the righteous receive their due on earth, how much more the ungodly and the sinner? Or it's taken from the New Testament, a story in the Bible where the Pharisees and the scribes went to the disciples and they were grumbling, why do you eat and drink with the tax gatherers and sinners? In this view of sin, there are two categories. The righteous, who are kind of falling apart right here, and the sinners. So you either fit into one category, like you might be a sinner, or you might be a righteous person. And I think this is what the way that most of our current culture sees this, the sin concept, is two different categories. Many people have this understanding of religion in general, and Christianity in particular, that it's basically a bunch of rules. And we who are Christians think that the people who obey these rules are good, and the people who don't obey are the sinners. And I think, besides a larger culture, this concept is also an idea that's sometimes held by Christians. My mother, when I was talking to her about the possibility of moving from Saskatchewan to Winnipeg into assisted living facility, actually asked me if there were Christians living there or if everybody was heathen. And I was momentarily shocked that someone was using the term heathens in an unironic way in the 21st century. But it's really the same idea. If people are like her, they are in the good category, and she wants to be around them. And if they're not like her, they are heathens. And she has a lot more hesitation about it. And I'm not sure, though, why I was so surprised to hear her kind of say that in that way, because this was the culture I was bathed in. I remember having very defined ideas of who was a Christian, who was in, who was out. And whether or not I heard words like heathens and sinners, I had a very strong sense that there were certain things that revealed that you were not one of the same group. Some of those were like swearing, drinking, and listening to secular music was another one. It was bad. Rock music actually gets two. There we go. And this categorization made it really hard for me to figure out what was going on in my world at times. When I was 10, my dad had arranged for us to take a bus tour with other families down to California. We saw Disneyland, we saw Universal Studios, and we spent a lot of time on the bus with these other families. It was a hot, like, it was such a fun time. It's one of the most highlights of my childhood. But I remember also, because this was over Christmas holidays, so it covered Christmas and New Year's. And on New Year's Eve, my sister, who's 2 years older than I, realized that our parents were downstairs in the hotel drinking alcohol with the other parents. And we were up in our hotel room on December 31st having this existential crisis about what does this mean that our parents are drinking? Because in our categories, you didn't do that. That was clearly in the sin category, the sinner category. So it was actually when I entered Bible college that I started to have a bit of a gray perspective on this, because, and that might surprise some of you, because Bible college isn't that where you get more entrenched in it, but it really wasn't. One of my best friends and I still talk about the first time he said the F word in front of me, and I was shocked, but I had to like totally reevaluate what I was thinking, because it was like, okay, I'm really sure this person is a Christian, and he just swore, and I don't know what to do about this. First guy I ever asked me out also revealed to me that he drank alcohol. I remember having a casual conversation with someone in the student lounge about his love of secular rock music, and all of these things ended up in my worldview gaining some needed adjustments. But I would have to say I probably still carried around at some level this idea of categories for people. And I just changed kind of which category I thought certain activities could go in. So I guess you can swear every once in a while, and I guess you can drink. You can really drink, actually. Don't get drunk, though. That's not her. No, just kidding. I changed the category in which certain activities could be in, and I clearly wanted to be in the righteous category. I'm convinced, though, that this way of seeing the world is divided into two groups. Righteous and sinners is not just a Christian thing. And I don't think it's even just a religious thing. If we take away the actual words, righteous and sinner, and just stick with the concept that there are good people and bad people, or right people or wrong people, or other labels, however we want to do it, we see this everywhere. Just this last week, I was talking to a coworker of mine who came to Canada as a refugee. And he was talking about a university class he had attended, and the prof was discussing gay marriage. This concept was really new to him, and he describes his reaction upon hearing it as out loud in the middle of the class going, "Oh, what?" And he said the reaction to everybody else was, and he was called on the carpet for it. He was asked to come to a meeting, he was told he needed therapy, all sorts of things. So we often see this kind of conception now coming. If you believe certain things about homosexuality, you're in the good category. And if you don't, you're in the bad category. The political tribalism, I think, that we have talked about, when I listen to discourse between people who identify with different labels, and it's usually a liberal-conservative divide, I hear a lot of messages that imply or outrightly state that it's not just the other side that is wrong about ideas, but that they are actually horrible people. They're snowflakes or a basket of deplorables or something like that. So when there are issues that people are passionate about, there's this profound tendency to not just disagree on ideas, but to put forth an assumption about the reasons that people believe as they do. And while we may not use terms like evil and sin, the effect is the same. We divide people into two camps, those who agree with me, those who don't, and the people who disagree with me, there is something wrong with them. It's not an exaggerated, this isn't an exaggerated effect either from the emergence of the internet and social media. It's really the way our minds and hearts are naturally. From an evolutionary perspective, this way of being actually makes sense, because belonging to tribes that could compete against other tribes was a way to persist and pass on our genes. Skepticism and outright hatred of those who are not us was an asset in survival and reproduction. So it shouldn't surprise us that being tribal is pretty normal, and that seeing people in categories is actually a default state. But normal still has a cost. It impacts how we see ourselves, and that we miss out on chances to grow. The first step of positive change is always the idea that maybe I got something wrong. And if we are so busy defending our own rightness and goodness, we really can't reflect honestly. Instead, we say things like, you will never convince me, because we are the right ones, the good category. And if I changed, I'd be in that other category. I don't want to do that. A few years ago, I read a book called Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me. And it talked about that once we have made a decision, we then continue to justify it in our minds. And we focus on all the evidence that seems to agree with our decision, and we kind of ignore the evidence that doesn't back it up. While we're really good at justifying our actions, though, at some level, we all know we do things that are not in line, even with our own moral codes. So when we've done something that we would look down on another group for doing, if we live in concept A, we have a couple of choices. We can remain in denial, and we can justify all that I do, and feel uncomfortable with that cognitive dissonance that results, or we can feel a sense of really deep shame and try to live in secrecy. Concept A also impacts our relationships with others. I think one of the parables that would really take that out or enlighten that is the story of the unmerciful servant. It's where a king wanted to settle accounts with people in his kingdom, and a man. And I'm going to insert names in here, so it's just they're not in the Bible, but I find it's easier to tell this parable if there's some names, so we don't have to say this man, the other man. Okay, so a man, let's call him Joe. He owed the king a lot of money. It was about 20 years worth of wages for a day laborer. He said he couldn't pay it, and the king said that he and his wife and his children were to be sold into slavery. So Joe falls on his knees and asks for patience, that he will pay it back. And the king, instead of just giving him more time, decides to cancel the debt. So Joe left this meeting. He runs into Pete, who owes him money, about a day's worth of wages. Joe grabs Pete, starts to choke him, and demands that he pay back what he owes. And Pete says basically the same thing, please have patience with me, I will pay you back. But Joe didn't have patience, and he had Pete thrown into prison until he could pay it back. The things that stand out for me in this story that fit with how we operate when we operate within concept A is a few things. First of all, Joe said he would pay it back. And yet, when you think 20 years of wages, there was probably no way he could. And when we live in concept A, we can have an unrealistic idea about ourselves and what we've done. We deceive ourselves about things like how much hurt we have caused. Another thing that stands out for me is Joe, when he left, he not only asked Pete for the money, he started to choke Pete, which wasn't something that the king had done to Joe. And when we see ourselves as righteous, we are really harsh with other people. We'll overreact and see small grievances as reasons to punish and bring people down. One of the first people in an online way that had this happen in this extreme way was somebody by the name of Justine Sacco. She was traveling, she's a businesswoman, worked in some online enterprises, and she was traveling, and she had a Twitter account, so she was tweeting things that she was jokes she thought was funny, things like that. And while she was at the airport, she tweeted, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white." Later, she said, as we were explaining that she was trying to be sarcastic. She was trying to mimic and mock what an actual racist, this is her words, what an actual racist, ignorant person would say. She was on the plane for 10 hours, and during that time, her tweet starts exploding all over the internet and goes back to her employers, and the pressure goes on her employers. What are you going to do about this? And so she landed 10 hours later to find out that this tweet has exploded all over the internet, and that she's been fired. I'm not going to defend whether or not it was an appropriate joke, but I am asking if any of us gets through life without saying something inappropriate at times when we're trying to be humorous or passionate about something. Can we throw the first stone? Do we want others to give us the benefit of the doubt? Living in concept A doesn't allow for us to give others the benefit of the doubt. It just makes us want to revel in punitive measures. Joe, in our parable story, made it pretty much impossible for Pete to be in anything but debt. Because Pete, he owed him a day's worth of wages. He probably could have paid him back in time. But by throwing him in jail, Joe took away his livelihood, any way to pay it back. A couple years ago, somebody that I worked with when I was in youth care asked me if I would come to a meeting with her with CFS, because she had been dealing with addictions, she lost custody of her kids, and she needed to meet with CFS and lawyers around this whole thing. And I said I would. It was a really fascinating meeting because the CFS worker started in on who I'm calling Samantha. Samantha saying, like, "You've done, you know, you were drinking and da-da-da, and then you would always come to the CFS office and ask for grocery coupons," or grocery, what would be the word, gift cards. And that's really interesting because within a CFS, the way CFS is supposed to be working, poverty is not supposed to be a reason that we keep kids in care from their families. So I kind of interrupted the meeting and said, like, "I have no doubt that there's a lot of things that Samantha has done that were concerning because that's why our kids are in care, but can we focus on what it is you actually want her to do?" And so she said, "Oh, well, it's all in the plan that we based out." And I said, "Okay, well, I have no idea about this plan. Could we go through it?" And so they went through it point by point, and we found out Samantha had actually done every single thing on the plan. But the CFS worker was still stuck in that idea of keeping her in a category of bad parent. There are also relationships that are affected by concept A, not just with people in the other category, but people in our own category, the supposed good ones. Living in concept A affects how we relate to them too. We're less likely to question, confront, or challenge people in the good category, even if it's needed. We ignore and excuse bad behavior. "Maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe we had good reasons. Maybe we should just forgive Trump." Or we will just shift them into the other category, the sinners, and then treat them as the other category. We'll grow in rigidity of what we see as acceptable and not acceptable, and we'll slap labels on other people. And I've heard story after story where people who disagree with someone on ideas get slapped on a label that actually even makes no sense, like females accused of misogyny, liberals accused of being alt-right, or a gay person called a homophobe. At best, When it comes to other people in the other category, with those we see in the other category, we tolerate. And tolerate is better than some things, but it also seems to presuppose this idea of my superiority. Like, I am allowing for someone to be as they are, as if I am the arbiter of what is good. We don't learn, and we are not likely to be truly kind. I think concept A also impacts our relationship with God. We'll tend to jump through mental hoops to convince ourselves that we are on the side in which God is pleased. But the cognitive dissonance of that is that at some level we know we're not perfect, but this need to be in the righteous category means that we have to pretend. That's not sustainable. We may worry about being a disappointment to God, and we might wonder if we're really accepted or loved. But it's not the only way of viewing the concept of sin, and it's not certainly not the only concept I've seen in Scripture. Concepts that I'm calling, guess what? Concept B. In this concept, we are all in the same category. A couple of places in Scripture that I see that coming out is the time that the teachers and Pharisees brought a woman who was caught in adultery to Jesus and said, you know, the law says we can stone her. What do you say? He just said, okay, the one who has never sinned, you throw the first stone. And they all left. I also see it in the words of Paul where he says that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. It's not a matter of righteous and sinners and righteous people and sinners, but that we're all in the same place. The person that I thought put it best, and she wasn't meaning to make a point about faith, because I don't even think she recognizes herself as being part of any particular faith, but it was the evolutionary biologist Heather Hayne. And I heard her on a podcast saying, as products of evolution, we are both beautiful and glorious and rather reprehensible. And to me, this idea seems to line up well with Scripture that says we are both made in the image of God, and we sometimes do things we know we are wrong, that we know are wrong. We are both saints and sinners. And if the word sin seems a little bit too strong and negative still, consider this. One of the words that's translated in sin as sin in the Bible is a Greek word, which I'm now going to mispronounce, hamartia. And it is a word that's used in archery. It simply means to miss the mark. And I find that fascinating, because to say that sin is missing the mark seems to say something about our intent. We're people who are aiming for something, and we're usually trying to live a life that's morally good, but we know that we sometimes end up causing hurt and pain. Our actions don't always live up to our deepest intentions. And concept B doesn't really come naturally to us. Seeing ourselves on equal footing with others, people who don't think and act like us, even people we might consider enemies. It's not easy, and it's not even a particularly pleasant process. This is one of the reasons why Jesus gets attention 2,000 years later. It's both counterintuitive, but yet something about it rings true. And as we try to live out the idea of concept B, we see some benefits. In terms of how we see ourselves, we can acknowledge both parts of ourselves and align that with reality. We don't have to pretend to be better than we are in order to feel worth and dignity. We can take wrong steps, realize we've done so, and go back to correct. It's like the song that Tim and Jane often play, Trusty and True. If all that you are is not all you desire, then come. Come, let yourself be wrong. We embrace the idea that we might be wrong and change our thinking because we don't believe that thinking the right things is what makes us righteous. Because I can see both evil and good within myself, I see the need to make choices in favor of good. I won't assume that my choices are always the right ones, but realize that sometimes I miss the mark. And acknowledging this sin in myself gives me the freedom to choose better and miss the mark less often. Concept B changes how we relate to others. We can see others just as people rather than sorting them into categories. We can see the complexity of their thoughts and their lives. We don't have a need to simplify stories in order to slot people into a certain role that feels good for us. And we can be grateful. That's one thing that we didn't see in the story of Joe and Pete. Joe never said thank you. Joe never went to the king and expressed gratitude for what was given. He was kind of entitled. We can interact with grace, not assuming things about others. In our communications, we can allow for culture and interpretation and connotations. We don't have to jump to a conclusion about the other person that's wrong or disingenuous and lying. Grace enables communication because it allows for more than one possible story. The coworker I told you about, he was put into this ideological bad category because of his shock around the idea of homosexuality. After all this had kind of started to come down, he went to the professor and said, "What did you expect from me? Like, I am a refugee from Africa. In where my culture, like in where I come from, my culture, we don't talk about this. In fact, it's a crime. It's considered a crime. So as my teacher, how are you going to teach me what it is you want me to know?" And she took him up on it. And they developed a different communication style within this issue. And this is a category B kind of response. He demonstrated grace even while not being shown it. And she responded likewise, giving him the tools to learn. And category B does that. It breaks down dividers. There's a civil rights activist by Pauli Murray who has a quote I really like. She said, "When they draw a circle to exclude me, I will draw a larger circle to include them." It also affects how we relate to God. In the summer of 1988, how many of you were alive then? Okay, more than I think. Okay. Really fresh. Okay. I read a book called Loving God by a guy named Charles Colson. And some of you will recognize that as a very conservative author, and if that offends you, sorry. But he talked about something that happened to him, happened while he was serving in the armed forces, and I believe it was the Korean War. This is like 30 years ago I read this book, so I might get some things wrong, but this is what my memory says about what I read. He was in a position of some authority and was leading a group in an area, and they came across this traveling merchant. Technically, this guy was not supposed to be in the area. There were rules against that. But there were a lot of these traveling merchants around, and they had things that soldiers wanted. So generally, their presence was, we could say, tolerated in the area, and no one actually enforced the rule. But what Colson did in that moment was he told the soldiers that they could go and get what they wanted from the guy, probably food, beverages, something like that, and then he told them they didn't have to pay for it. And this made the soldiers really happy. And in this bro culture that he was a part of, he was the big man. And no one really had a thought for the poor merchant that was powerless in the situation. And in remembering that incident years later, Colson felt this deep sense of shame. He realized that as much as he wanted to see himself in the good category of concept A, he couldn't. He started to see himself as a sinner, and it changed him. And for me, in reading that book, something broke in my, at that time, good Mennonite girl, 19-year-old self. Because although I couldn't recall ripping off a poor merchant, I was, as I talked about, living in concept A with the cognitive dissonance that comes with it. And when I read that book, those words of Paul about saying, "While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us," was really powerful for me. And I would say even life-changing. Because if it was not my actions but God's choice that motivates divine love for me, then nothing I can do will make that divine love go away. And I can acknowledge sin because there's no loss for me in doing so. I walk in grace. I don't have to pretend I'm good to believe that God will love me. I can simply be as I am and be in God's love. So when we decide to live in concept B, we can reject certainty. We can embrace doubt, and we can especially embrace doubt of our own rightness. Within this group, I think many of us have had very similar journeys. Think of it as like we grew up on this island where we were surrounded with certain expectations and beliefs and practices, but at some point we experienced doubt about them. Something didn't seem to fit. So we left the island. We sailed away, we found a new island, tried on new expectations, beliefs, and practices. But I do wonder if, for a group like us, there can be a tendency for us to now feel like we have found it. Now, we have this new progressive way of being, and we are liberated. And we can become just as entrenched in our own rightness as we were on the island we left. We can fail to not only realize that there are still islands out there where we have that have things that we don't know about, but that the island which we left still has valuable things for us to know as well. So I asked Tim to call this thing the great thing about sin. And the great thing about sin is not the actual sin, the missing of the mark, because quite frankly, that usually sucks. But the great thing about sin that is that if we embrace the idea that it's a part of us, it's a part of all of us altogether, we don't have to play pretend. We can receive grace and be grateful. We can extend grace and be loving. And we can walk in a new level of freedom, free to question our own beliefs and values, because our worth doesn't depend on categories. Thanks for being an excellent group of sinners to be with.